Welcome to another episode of Psyche of Sales. I keep saying these are special ones, but this is something that the first time we've actually had a world record holder on Psyche of Sales. So I want to say a big welcome to Cameron Vanderburg. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And then Brian Difford, who obviously you're going to hear a lot of over the coming months and years as well. And Cameron and Brian are mates. Well, I might start, Brian, and say, how did this all come about?
Interesting story, actually. So Cam and I essentially grew up swimming together in South Africa when we were youngsters, now about 20 years or so ago. I ended up finishing high school in a city in South Africa called Pretoria. And
congratulations on finishing high school.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
A lot of people didn't predict that happening, so I just want to say well done.
Finished it in a speedo, so, you know, got through it. We ended up at the High Performance Center, which was a performance center actually designed off the AIS, the Australian Institute of Sport, which was the concept around, instead of having sport around your schooling, it was the concept of having schooling around your sport. So it was designed around how do we cater to athletes in a environment where they still need to, essentially get an education as well as focus quite heavily on whatever the sport might be.
Yeah, okay.
So that's where Cammy and I met and became mates. And then I went off to the States to swim. He stuck around and pretty much just smashed the rest of the world at breaststroke. And then when I moved to London, we ended up actually at a mutual friend's farewell. And I ran into him and we reconnected. And we've now started doing a lot of running together. We still obviously are both very much addicted to training and keeping fit and those types of things, but new challenges outside of the water.
Yep.
And so I said to him, look, we got a business. We focus on how to create high performance in the context of selling. And, you know, Cam's got a hell of a lot of experience in how to create high performance in the context of the world of swimming. And, you know, I think there's a hell of a lot of cross-pollination in what it takes to become a world record holder, in what it takes to become a world-class seller.
Yep.
And so I thought, let's get him on our podcast and see what that cross-pollination looks like.
You know, when you describe it like that, maybe you want to jump in, Cameron, and just say thank you so much for doing this, because it's pretty incredible to have someone who was the fastest person in the world at their sport at a period of time. So just thank you for doing this. We really appreciate it. Cameron, do you want to maybe introduce yourself?
Yeah. As Brian said, you're a South African, Pretoria boy, grew up, loved swimming, sport. Somehow managed to be able to climb to the top of the world, and you know, was very fortunate to travel around, represent South Africa, did a couple Olympic Games, walked away with a gold, silver, about 16 world records in the end, or something like that. But ultimately, I was just fortunate enough, I guess, to sort of do what I love. I think that was the main thing at the end. So the 16 years of my life, I was able to, you know, represent South Africa, travel the world, do what I love, make amazing memories, and I think that that was the biggest blessing. And just learned a lot of principles on high performance. So I think a lot of methodologies that has enabled me to also succeed post retirement in the next life. And I think easily transferable to a lot of people in everything in life, not just sales. We're selling ourselves every day, I guess, but in pretty much everything that you do.
Yeah, I love it. I do like that, just rolls off the tongue of 16 world records. I was going to jump in and, as a joke, and say, were you disappointed you retired without 20? I might leave it for what it stands for, which is an amazing achievement. But yeah, we had a bit of a chat beforehand, and obviously, you know this. I don't want to, you know, almost cheapen what you've done from a position of saying, you know, how do we create high performance sales from what you do? But certainly something we talk about regularly is this idea of betterment, this idea of, you know, not going to a training course once a year and expecting to be better at what you do. That idea of it's got to be daily, it's got to be weekly, it's got to be just part of your high performance operating rhythm. So if you think back to your earliest memories, what clicked for you that sort of made you go from being a hobby swimmer to someone who actually wanted to chase high performance?
I think being able to, I think, express yourself in something that you do that you enjoy. I think that was really click for me. And, you know, I'd done a lot of different sports when I was young. You know, typical South African boy, you're out every day. We've got great weather. You know, you're swimming, cricket, rugby. Unfortunately, wasn't that fast at running. So we're definitely doing a lot of practice on that right now. But and then rugby, I also was a little bit. My father didn't love it as much because it was a little bit dangerous. He got quite a couple of injuries. Cricket, I really enjoyed as well, and then swimming. And and swimming was kind of the one that I just really loved. And you know, I think it's just that like I said, you're finding something to enjoy, and then from there you take it, you know, more seriously. You know, I think I personally have quite an addictive behavior, and even now down to the things like, you know, picking up running. You know, I'm researching about the running, seeing what's going on, how can I be better, measuring everything, obviously, you know, what gets measured gets sort of managed, you know, how can we be better. And I think all this, you know, all that was I think the hallmarks of a high performer. And that's sort of what I enjoyed about swimming was that it's very time oriented and very, you can observe everything. So you knew, you know, I was recording the mileage that I was doing of the week, obviously the times that you're doing, how were you improving, discussing races with the coaches, and from an analytical perspective, it was really great and something that really intrigued me. And obviously at the same time, something that I enjoyed. And so it was sort of the natural progression to be able to try and do that professionally and then actually take it quite seriously.
I think I can see why you two get on well. I've got Brian who reads the protein bar that I'm eating just to tell me the carbs versus sugar ratio and telling me that the artificial sweeteners is going to ruin my insulin responses for the rest of my life. So I'm actually too scared to eat now. I think it's I'm going to do a 7-day fast while I'm here just to get through, just to please Brian.
But let me get off your back.
But what I love to hear about that is, and I've come across some pretty impressive executives. We've interviewed for this Josh Kennedy, who's a Sydney Swans captain and premiership winner, and sort of talking through that, you know, very much team basis rather than maybe individuals. But I remember catching a lady a few years ago, and she was a private wealth advisor, and a phenomenal one. And I sort of said to her once, I don't think it matters what you do, you would be successful at it. And hearing you discuss that idea of you hold yourself to a really high standard and everything you do edges towards that level of high performance. So whether it's running, whether it's swimming, whether it's your career. And when I look at just hearing you speak about that, what holds a lot of people back is they're not actually aiming for anything. They're not holding themselves to a standard. And I think one of the challenges in sales is you get paid pretty well without being a high performer. Does that make sense? Like I've often said this idea that sometimes I think we just get so comfortable that people are making insert number 100, 200, 300, 400, 500,000 a year. And so this idea of chasing high performance, and there's a particular group we work with that, you know, there's people who are making $1 million plus that never expected to. And you can see so many of them think, well, why would I work harder? I can just run this business like this. Whereas you see the odd few who it does, the number that they make has nothing to do with it. It is what they do and execute every day. You know, it's that, and that's what we call it, a high performance operating rhythm. And just, I don't know, I'm feeling a bit inspired just speaking to you, Cameron, that idea of intent, you know, like I describe it as being relentless almost. It's relentless. You just want to make the most of it, so to speak. Can you maybe tell us about what shifted from maybe being a good swimmer to a great, like at what age did you break world records, and you know, how did you think you made that shift?
I think my first world record was I was 20. I'd gone to the Olympics. I'd missed the final. It was my first Olympics. Missed the final. I came in ninth and was probably disappointed. And then I went on to race this series called the World Cup Series, which is about, say, 3 months just post that. And I think, you know, that was the first time that I broke the world record and then went on consecutive to break a couple more and win the World Cup as the overall and male victor. And I think, you know, it was more one of the first times that I think we'd had this huge training cycle to get to the Olympic Games. We had this huge peak, disappointment. And I didn't take a lot of time off. I just sort of went straight on. I think it was almost a mixture between sort of the compounding effect of improving and continuing on a good momentum. Because I knew I was in really good shape, and the performance that I'd given the Olympics was my best showing. Was, you know, round on just sort of at the Olympic Games, it's such a big thing, you know, and the first time I had a really good heat, almost got ahead of myself thinking I'm going to get to the final straight away and miss the final. So that was the number one rookie error that I had made there. But building on that was coming, you know, sort of pushing through and then beginning to identify, okay, well, you know, the mistakes that I made, you know, started working as a sports psychologist, continue the momentum with my shape there. And took all of that into the World Cup and sort of was able to actually, I think it wasn't as much that I had increased the performance, as much as able to realize it from the mistakes that I had made. And so learning from the mistakes, obviously, was a big thing, but being able to put it together at the right time. So, you know, looking back, just identifying, I think, you know, always when you're winning, you never learn, like learning, you know, losing, obviously you always pick up something. And I think, you know, Diff and I had this long conversation on our run the other day where I'm not the kind of guy where I'm very, you know, I speak to myself as I would speak to a friend. And so I'm not the kind of guy where I would say after a bad performance, like, you know, you're an idiot, you suck, you know, you've got to get up. And I'm not a David Goggins where I'm just, you know, like, I wouldn't love to live in that guy's head if I could put it that way. But, you know, for me, it's more about the motivation of you know, continuing, getting up, you know, keep going. And, you know, it's, I mean, I'm sure you've obviously encountered it, but obviously, it's, you know, it's great that when you surround yourself with the right people, you know, he's very motivating. He's also very, you know, supportive and positive. It was the same way with where I was, and just bringing that sports psychologist into the group, continuing on the positive momentum and just trying to figure out what was wrong and then building on that. You know, I think that was enabled me to have that good performance. I mean, Padil wasn't obviously at the Olympic Games, but Selavi, you know, you live and you learn, and I think that's been a big motor for me.
Good use of the word enable as well. Did you see that?
Yeah, so I did.
A bit of a plug for us, I think.
I think there's something that you've mentioned there that is incredibly important, at least that I've learned in my sort of journey in life, is that. And I think this is very important in the context of creating high performance, not just salespeople, right? You know, some people, they're a broker, some people, they're an agent, some people, they're a salesman. Ultimately, creating high performance in anybody who needs to deal with a customer is this idea that you can use failure to your advantage. You know, Stephen Bartlett talks about it in his book quite a lot, Diary of a CEO, which is failure is knowledge, because those who can fail a lot can learn a lot. Just like Cam said, like, you know, taking not having made the final in your first go, taking lessons out of that, using that failure as a positive driver to not want to go back there the next time, enables you not just to make the final the next time, but actually break the world record. So you've taken something that may have initially been viewed at as a negative and turned it into not just a positive, but a groundbreaking positive. And I think if you can take that kind of skill in the art of dealing with a customer, you know, certainly in the context of sort of issue resolution or, you know, dealing with challenges that a customer may throw at you, where it may initially start out as something that appears to be negative, but that you can then turn around and use it to become a positive. I think that's a hell of a good skill in the context of not just life, but in the world of creating these high performance environments with clients.
But also what I take from it is a couple of things, right? Number one, not just with clients, but if you're running a team.
Yeah,
you're running a sales team and how you deal with it. And I love that piece around you're not in the David Goggins mindset of you idiot, you stuffed up, you ruined it. And you know, I read this book on psychology and it talked about this idea of it's almost this dismissive parent. You know, it's you're dismissing yourself, so you're not going to get the most out of it. So that idea of almost nurturing yourself, because I think one of the reasons that's really important is you didn't mess up at the Olympics. Like, you did 99% of it right, like you didn't learn a new stroke, I assume. You didn't suddenly, you know, it probably wasn't your kick. It was, as you said, it was maybe getting ahead of myself. But like, I'm going to put you on the spot, you may not know this, but do you remember the time difference between you being ninth and eighth for the final?
Yeah, it was like 0.03.
okay,
and the time that I'd done in the heats would have got me to the final. The semi-final swim that was about to
move. And that's the piece when I talk to teams. Like, we don't sit in front of groups that are broken.
Yeah.
Like, it's not our world. Like, we've got clever, highly paid people. You know, they're intelligent, they're educated. They know what they're doing. They know their product better than we do, right? But it's that idea of how do you take what you've done and unlock one or two key pieces that allows you to be in a greater mindset, be able to perform at a certain time. You know, it's those little pieces, and we worked on this pitch for a client, and again, I find myself finding it really hard to even give examples because it's embarrassing compared to breaking a world record. but this idea of that they had a major pitch, there was 9 people pitching, right? And they all prepared their own pitch and they're ready to go, and I'm getting them to practice, rehearse together, because winning a pitch isn't about knowing a script, it's about how we interact with each other. It's about, like, you can't tell people you operate as a team, you need to demonstrate. You can't tell someone you're motivated, right? Like, you don't tell me I'm naturally motivated. I can hear you're naturally motivated. Like, it's intent. You've got to demonstrate it. And to the point, though, that they were pitching at 9:30 a.m. on Tuesday. So at 9:30 a.m. on Monday, we had them in the room in advance and we did a dress rehearsal, which means if you stuff up, you treat it. There was 10 clients that were going to pitch through. We had 10 people in the room. Q&A started at a set time. They weren't finished there, but it didn't matter. We started Q&A. Yeah. Like, we made it, we replicated it, the zero excuse, this is what it's going to look like, so that when they walk in to that room the next day, they're comfortable. Does that make sense? Like, we even set the room up identical to the place they're going to be running the room. And I think that, you know, when I hear that, there's the 0.03, and I'm not bringing that up because you've had a lot of success afterwards, you literally did everything right, bar, you know, one small element. And I think if the people that are listening to this can just do that reflection piece, the way they talk to themselves of what's the one or two things I could do that could unlock that next piece of potential.
Yeah, I mean, and it's so true. I mean, I think about my selling career, the amount of times we've actually done that where you have put yourself in a race day situation for a pitch or a piece of work, it's very, very few. And so we're expected to perform on the day, but we're never practicing what it takes to emulate the day.
Yep.
And I think that's a big gap in the world of high performance, certainly as you start to shift it from potentially out of something you are traditionally good at, a sport or whatever it may be, into something else you want to be good at.
Yes.
One of the questions things I wanted to talk about, Cam, is what he hasn't mentioned here, which I think is something I'm quite passionate about. I'd like to give him a lot of kudos in this space, is that he broke a lot of world records, but along the way, he completely transformed the way the stroke of breaststroke was swum.
Okay.
To a whole new, if you look at the mold of breaststroker that Cam was the first person to bring to this universe, that mold never existed before. And so it wasn't just looking at peak performance, but it's this idea of small gains and changing small things over the way to completely change the way the stroke was swum, because there was a more efficient, better way to do it. And then prove that to the rest of the world. And I think that's something that is truly incredible. You know, it's more than just being the best at a stroke. It's transforming the whole stroke itself.
So how did that come about?
Well, I think there's two aspects of that, right? Is that the one is that, you know, don't be afraid to press your strengths. And I think that before breaststroke was from the 200 down to the 100 meters. So traditionally, you know, you had your guys that were more endurance based, and they would swim, you know, turn around very well, and then the 100 obviously was a bit faster. Then you had traditionally guys that were kind of focusing on the 50, and they would do okay in the 100, but they wouldn't. They would always die at the end. So I came from the sprinter background, more from the 50 side, and you know, there's this whole idea, obviously, where you've got to work all, you know, so much on your weaknesses. Yes, you should, of course, but sometimes, you know, I think it's to the detriment of your major strengths. So, and then people end up sort of not playing that. So I had post-2008, after you know, doing well there on the hundreds and stuff, and I'd actually then gone to train with the Japanese Olympic champion from 2008. That was the Olympics that I got missed the final. And he was from 2004. So he was quite a legend in the game. He was this 200 to 100 mold. The idea was like, all right, let's see if we can try and pick this up. And went over there, probably like 10 kilos, doing a lot of endurance work, eating sushi, you know, learned how to chopsticks and everything like that. But the idea anyway was that I had learned, or I sort of molded and shifted, but in the process, so yes, my back end was better, but I kind of threw away that strong suit that I had, which was the speed. So now I was this sort of average endurance guy and an average speed guy, and that kind of doesn't really work anyway. or it's not going to elevate you to the top of the game. And so came back that guy after about a year and a half, and then had focused then on the speed game, and it was more around not necessarily trying to take all of this endurance work that I'd learned. It was saying, okay, fine, how can we change the speed training to incorporate more speed endurance, not endurance. And so that then led to this new style where I was able to swim pretty fast at a high pace for quite a while and actually finish the 100 meters. And this sort of led into 2012 Olympics and broke the world record there. And I was the first guy to, outside of the special super suit that we had, to break the world record in the 100 press and do the time. And so, yeah, I think, like, it was, like I said, the combination of pressing your strengths, but also being able to try something new and not being afraid on that and breaking the mold. Because, again, you know, you're always told that you should go and train like the 200 guys. This is how you should go and do it. So it was sort of trying that, figuring it out. That's not actually how I can do it. And then coming back and saying, you know, let's press the strengths. Let's work on that. And you're having success.
This is really inspiring. This I love the pressing on your strengths, and this is a terminology we use within organisations, and we find people in training, like executives we work with and salespeople, they get worse when they get trained with some organisations because they get told the things they're doing wrong, and so they're trying to change everything, you know, when actually they're doing a lot right. And so the majority of the feedback we give is we talk about how curious they are. And the cause of that is the fact that you're not just asking questions, but the way you look at people and you follow up with more questions like out there. And I really recommend you keep that curiosity. And that person walks out and says, "Wow, I'm really curious. I've got to ask more questions." And it drives this great behavior. And then you say, but one aspect is you looked a little distracted. And that was because you moved around the room a little too much. So if you could just try and keep your gaze a bit closer. Now, sometimes it's the chin, it could be eye contact, these little aspects. But I want you to walk out of that, number one, feeling strong, feeling good, feeling confident. Two, know what you're great at out there, because you don't need to be great at everything. You know, just some things in what we do. So to hear you sort of talk about that strength base, but also that trying something, like not being afraid. I think they used it on Facebook. I know Ali from Striver was someone on a podcast told us this, just don't be afraid to break it. Like, literally try things, break things, and see how it goes. I was going to say, Cam, one of the ways you could have tried to change breaststroke to be a bit faster is maybe come over like that and kick.
Outside of getting disqualified, it would have been a great idea.
I think you would have won every race. You did anyway. But that's from me to you. That's for free.
Yeah.
An innovation you could have brought into breaststroke.
Look, I also think there's a piece in there about belief, right? So we're talking about, Cam's talking about Katajima, as Brendan Hansen. We're talking about guys from traditionally big swimming countries that had been around for a long time. And it's quite a hard thing to think about, being a guy on the tip of Africa challenging these major powerhouses in a sport that's been around for a while.
Yep.
And very often that you've got to have the confidence to sort of step up to the plate and say, I'm going to give it a chance and do something differently.
And that's certainly something South Africans have a problem with, that confidence piece, isn't it?
Yeah, so, exactly. It's unlocking that, you know?
Yes, it is. It's interesting. I'm thinking about our audience, right? So we do a lot of work in Australia. Can we do a lot of work in Asia, launching in the UK. And I'm just thinking, like, probably the, apart from the US, the greatest swimming nations, you know, in the sense of that, you know, like we live and breathe swimming in Australia, obviously.
Yeah.
And I've met Grant Hackett a few times, and he's a very successful businessman now, but the way he talks about performance, and he talks team a lot as well, because Australia has a very large swimming team, and these are the aspects that we focused on, and he brings a lot of that into his business in the few times that I've met him anyway.
The one thing I did want to ask is, which I think is quite a good segue into this part of the conversation, is, you know, we've spoken a lot about the way Cam applied himself to the art of swimming to get sort of to the top of the swimming totem pole. Cam, I guess the question I have for you is around, what are the lessons, the skills, the beliefs, the competencies, whatever they may be, that you then took from sport and swimming and then applied into your professional life, right? Because I think another thing that I've seen is there's a lot of guys who come out of a background of swimming who end up being swimming coaches. There's not a lot of guys who have broken out of the world of swimming to then become very successful businessmen as well. And so I think there's something to be learned there, because you're taking the skills you learn to become successful in one thing and applying a similar kind of mentality to how do I become good at something else. So I mean, I'd love to sort of pick your brain there. So if you had to think about that, what are the sort of, I don't know, three or four major things you would have taken from what you learned in becoming an athlete to how you learned to becoming a successful businessman?
I think, yeah, outside of the traditional sort of, you know, I think everyone knows at this level already, right? Like, you know, the hard work, obviously, you know, sort of having routines, i.e. like checklist type thing. You know, in swimming, you have, you know, your warm up, your drills, you get to your, you know, to your main event. It's very similar. You know, I mean, I work now at a hedge fund as a portfolio manager in energy. And every week, you know, you're looking at certain different things, you know, positioning, you know, inventory levels, you know, exports, flows, you know, all these different things. And it's sort of like a checklist that you're always knocking off, you know, and these are just the sort of basics just to be in the game. You know, you have to obviously be there. And I think that, you know, building the system around that, that sort of that reflex reaction, it's kind of like when you go to swim your race, you know, you don't have to think, how do I actually swim the race? You know, am I swimming breaststroke now? Like, I've got to dive in, do the arms, you know, it just sort of happens. And that's through, you know, just sort of the time in the market and the 10,000 hours. So I think, you know, that's kind of standard. But I think the big thing for me is I always used to think of every season, a season would end and, you know, you kind of almost started at zero again. You're like bottom of the totem pole. And the beauty about that, the way that I used to think of it, is that I always used to then try and say, all right, you know, we're all starting from scratch. You know, we all have to earn sort of the season and you build your way up. It's kind of the same for me where transitioning to a new career, you know, I've climbed down from this high mountain and, you know, I started from the base of another little mountain and, you know, climbed and I tried the first mountain, you know, it wasn't Everest, but, you know, we climbed the first little Bathy and then moved on to the next one and the next one. And, you know, I'm 5 years in now, you know, very fortunate to be working at, you know, the world's biggest hedge fund, Millennium, and trading, you know, with some of the best guys in the world, but only through process of, you know, iterations of every year I would go through, you know, I stopped doing something, don't make it up, eventually got given a bit of money, got the portfolio, got the first year, bought the returns, you know, second year, etc. And you're building on this sort of every year. And for me, I think having that ability to just say, I can start again at zero, it's a new project, it's a fresh mindset. Yes, you know, you're going in it with experience that you've learned over time, but when you're attacking something new, attack it with that fresh vigor and energy that that you know you've obviously you set the goal, but you can attack it from a place of humbleness and build your way up. So that's I think the first thing that was really good with swimming, and the second thing was as you guys have spoken about is and gone hack it is leaning on a good team is in this world again, you know. I've been very fortunate to have really great business mentors, you know, some of the best portfolio managers in the world now. You know, sort of able to give them a couple, able to give me a couple of trading tips in that sense. And so it's been a really great exchange, but just a mentorship and someone to soundboard off and to chat to. And also then obviously being able to pay the forward now, being able to take a younger school of these portfolio managers that are just starting in the market. And that's also a beautiful process because you're effectively teaching yourself something, right? Do you really know something unless you can teach it? And so that's been also really a great in that essence, but also just the enjoyment of what I'm doing now. And again, like I said to you in the beginning, right, is that I loved swimming and was so fortunate to do very well. And what I'm doing right now, although it sounds very weird, you know, this guy's come from swimming into finance. Like that doesn't sound like a natural progression. But already at the last 2 years of school, at grade 11 and grade 12, I was trading these paper portfolios in South Africa and then went on to start earning my own money. I was trading my own, you know, percentage of my own capital. You know, had a wealth manager, would bug him every week. Why are you doing this? Why are you buying that? You know, et cetera. And so that iterative process, again, is something that I do love. And you know, I'm being in this game now, again, like I say, enjoying what I do, but also being able to now get back, work with a great team, give back to, you know, to people. Because again, you know, life is a journey, right? And the biggest thing that I learned about the Olympic, winning Olympic gold standing there is that, you know, it's really incredible, of course, but, you know, that was not the, it wasn't this aha moment where it was like, it was obviously really incredible, but it wasn't like, oh my God, you know, my life is made. It was, you know, looking back, it's that the journey of all those years, as I've mentioned, traveling the world, making the friends, doing the thing, you know, that is the best part of it. And this career or whatever career we do in life, I think that's, this is the thing, you know, these are the golden years. We are living in the years right now, you know, and you need to enjoy that. And, you know, when I'm 85 years old, you know, so cliche to say that, right? But you know, like even in 10, 15 years time, you know, my kids are going to be out and all these things. These are the golden years. These are the years that, you know, you got to live, you got to enjoy, you got to love, you got to do everything you can. Get up at 4:30 in the morning, go get trained, run the London Marathon. Go to work, you know, go do your thing, you know, like you're never going to get this time back. And just like, I just love it all, man. Just take it all in.
Love that.
You're getting chills. You're getting chills here.
I love that. Okay. And so often we think about, like, there's a couple of things you mentioned there that I think are so important. One is that you can set a short-term goal, work your butt off to achieve it, and then take that skill set and rinse and repeat that in any avenue of your life to become successful.
But also what I heard with that is it's not as though you started in finance and I need to be a portfolio manager tomorrow. Like I think exactly. People sometimes, like early in sales, early in PE, like we've got a lot of financial services clients and there's this rush. I had a young guy last year say that, he said, you know, I finished uni, I do a bit of mentoring with him, and he said, and I'm getting offered these graduate positions because I didn't do uni to become a graduate, right? He said, I expect to be at least a low-level manager. I said, do you understand what graduate means?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Said, like, what advice do you give? He said, just do a great job. So there was this guy, Charlie Bell, who was the first non-American to become the CEO of McDonald's globally. And he started working at McDonald's as a 14-year-old, right? And I'm going to paraphrase this. It may not be perfect, but he started off busting the tables. Like, he was cleaning the tables and picking things up. And someone I knew many years ago, he's passed away since, and he's Australian. So the training academy in Australia is called the Charlie Bell Academy. And he did this CEO's kind of boardroom talk. And this guy I knew was in the room. And he said, any questions after this talk? And someone put their hand up and said, did you just always know you were going to be the CEO of McDonald's? And he just looked at him like he was an idiot and said, I was 14. I didn't know what a CEO was. He says, but I had great parents who said, whatever you do, just be your best at it.
Yeah.
He said, so I went out and said, I wanted to be the best damn buster of tables. I wanted the table to shine. I wanted to make people's day. And so then they promoted me to the burger boy. And he goes, no. So I then wanted to make the best burgers I possibly could. And then I was on the front desk and I wanted to make people's day. Like, he just talked through it the entire way to being CEO. And what I loved about it, it's this terminology we use a lot, is set the process, but then just trust the process. And it sounds to me like you do this probably as well as anyone I've ever met in the world, Cam, is this, you set up a process and you follow it. You trust it. Like, it doesn't mean you can't change the process or optimize the process. If something's not working, I'm sure you're not going to keep doing it, right? But it is that idea. But the other thing that inspired me is the golden years piece of just,
like, enjoy the journey.
Bring life to it.
Yeah.
And I used to sort of go through moments sometimes of, I'd look at a week, I'd look at a day, I'd say, I've got to get through this week. And I sort of made this shift a few years ago of, I don't get through anything anymore. Like, it's that idea of, I want to thrive. Like, I want to thrive into this trip. You know, it's easy to get jet lagged, it's easy to get tired, it's easy to do these things, but still get up and do a workout. And just, how good was that? I got to work out in a gym in the middle of London underground. Like, it was like, I came out just feeling great about the experience of it. I finished work, I'm a bit tired, I go out somewhere and sit on my own and have a dinner in the middle, you know, in a bar that, you know.
And on that point, you know, I think it's so easy in the sense to head in life, is, you know, talking to that boy is, you know, doing the tables, is that if you just make the most of that situation that you have. I mean, like, my journey now through finance, I've just been very fortunate, but I've really maximized every opportunity and asked a million questions. And the guy would say, read a book, and I'd go and read that book. And I'd come back to him and I'd say, give me the next book, you know? And it's actually not that, I don't feel that it's that hard to get ahead if you just do the thing. You do the work and you enjoy it, man. And just, people don't want to do the work. They just don't want to do it. And that's the difficulty. The difference between a high performer and a low performer.
Absolutely.
And read the book a bit, though.
Yeah.
I had someone the other day who said, yeah, my boss is on my back a little bit. Like, they're just always at me. And they said, like, they told me to read this book. And then a week later, have you read the book yet? I said, like, he only told me a week ago. I said, I would have read it the next day. You know what I mean? I would have gone out of my way to have let them know that I've read it and what did I take from it. Like, or I would have demonstrated a behaviour. Like, it's that idea of, like, I feel like when we finish this podcast, we need to say, just go and read the book.
Yeah,
like, that's exactly the piece, right? Go read the book.
Yeah.
You know, it's that analogy of just whatever it is, just go do it. Just
people want to mentor other people.
Yes,
they do. People inherently want to help, but you know what?
I think people want to give help to other people, but if you take the help and you actually do it, they will give you more and more. And I think that's the trick that a lot of people don't actually do. As you mentioned, you give the advice, you give the help, but they don't take it, they don't do it, and then that's where it ends.
Absolutely, you know. And then if I look at that piece around enjoy the journey. You know, I employed this in the world of triathlon and certainly running afterwards, where, you know, and even in sales, you think about guys, they've got these big annual targets, right? And every day they're coming at it from a negative mindset and say, well, I'm not at the target yet. I'm not there. And then don't get to enjoy the journey of getting there. And I think if you can take that mindset out and start looking at what can I enjoy today to get good at today, to make myself just a little bit better today. Yep. When you start putting together all those little pieces, you end up getting a lot better over time. Yep. And that's exactly what we're talking about here, is this idea of love the journey and enjoy every moment, because if you can focus on making it better now, you'll get the compound effect of lots of little pieces together over time.
And it's what we talk about, like, in what we do every day. Like, we can't guarantee an organization is going to sell more as a result, because we don't know what the market's going to do. Like, we come into an organization and let's say the market shrinks by 30%, we might grow sales by 50, but it's still not going to be up, right? But what we can say is that we can make the individuals in the group more confident, right? And when they're more confident, they love what they do more. And when they love what they do, they tend to win a little bit more. And the more that they win, the more they love what they do, which gives them greater confidence, which makes them want to go back and learn the skills. And it becomes this flywheel, like a bit of positive flywheel, that becomes near unstoppable, right? Absolutely. But the reverse is true, right? We don't win. We lose confidence. We don't like what we do. We get demotivated. So we don't practice. So we don't win. So we lose confidence. We hate what we do. And it becomes that reverse flywheel where it becomes really hard to stop. And you know, we're talking to you know, I'll say two of the most motivated people I've ever met on this call here. Obviously, Diff didn't break a world record, but, you know, we have that in common, Diff and I. Neither of us have a world record.
true story.
You have got closer than I'll admit that, but still neither of us have it. And you did lose that race that year. But it's it is that aspect of, you know, there's a lot said of this idea of you don't need to be Cameron Vanderburg to be successful. Like, you don't need to be at that level, but if you could just set yourself some wins and some disciplines, and just every day, you know, it could be that uninterrupted prospecting time for an hour. Like, if you did 1 hour a day of prospecting uninterrupted, it's impossible that your business would not be better. Impossible, right? If you were to, you know, spend 10 minutes at the end of every day reflecting on your effectiveness, your optimization of time, right, you will be better than you were the day before. Like, it's just these things, and this is why sometimes when I talk to clients and they say, it'd be good to trial this. You don't need to trial it. This just works. Like, it's not, you know, you weren't trialing swimming practice. It's been proven that if you get stronger and you work on these things, you will get faster.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely. And I think this piece, sometimes we think we're practicing, we think we're trialing. We've got about 5 more minutes, Cam, if you've got that. We said we'd sort of take you to 1:30, and I don't want to go over time. What I'm really interested in, one other thing you said, is this idea of, you mentioned trusting the process and going through that. It hit me when you talked about finishing a career, how crazy that is as an athlete to retire and finish a career in your mid to late 20s, right? And if you think about how specific being a swimmer is, like, you literally, for a living, swam 50 and 100 metres multiple times.
Yeah.
Like, that is a very specific skill. And if someone ever challenged you, you'd be confident in that, because time and time again, you've proven it. And so Alex Hormozi, you know, he sort of talks about this idea. If he was asked by Stephen Bartlett, do you have self-belief? And he refused to answer it. He kept saying, I have enough evidence to prove that what I do equals a result. And I feel like as a swimmer, and I'm making this up, so please don't, but I'm just dragging this out. A swimmer has that self-belief in swimming and then reaches 25, sometimes 21, maybe 28, but does not have self-belief outside of it and necessarily without the right mentor hasn't been shown how to put the same process in. Because you're kind of going from the top and you're not starting from scratch. You've probably met some people and things like this, but you are starting significantly below. And so that idea of you have to then start resetting successes, many successes to get the self-belief that this is the process that works. And I just, when you spoke about that in finance, it just feels like you've replicated the same process with the humility of, I don't need to be the PM today. What I need to do is I need to act like the PM in the sense of I need to learn. I need to sort of set up like I would to be an Olympic swimmer. I need to set up what do I need to equip myself with to be the portfolio manager? And I know if I do that, the rest will sort itself out.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Ken?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I took a long time. I was 2 years as an analyst before I became a portfolio manager. And, you know, you start as a portfolio manager with small bucks and you build your way up, right? And, the pathway is there. You can see, you know, as long as you take the time and you plan it out and, again, you ask the questions like, how do I get from this point? I'd like to be at that point. And so you can then, you know, work your way backwards. And it doesn't all happen at the speed that you think it might happen. You know, maybe it takes a bit quicker. Some parts are quicker, some parts are slower. Some are more successful, some are less. But that's life, right? And the ups and the downs. And that's what makes life beautiful, obviously, at the same time as well. Otherwise, everything would feel the same. But being able to identify, I think, the points that you need to hit and working towards those individual points with the still peripheral vision of, okay, that's where I'm going to get to. That's the most important. It's kind of the whole idea of if you head off on a 1,000-mile journey and you're going in a straight line and you're off just, an inch in the front, you get to a very different destination kind of thing. And so, don't rush the journey, I think, at that same point. So when you have this 5-year outlook, 10-year outlook, et cetera, and I do this also in my relationships, for my family, for everything. I it was the first time this year, actually, just to put on the planning again. It's all coming to planning, right? Is this, I can't remember, I'd seen somewhere online where this, one of these, social media influencers, all these Hormozis and all that kind of stuff. And this guy, he has this huge calendar and he planned out the whole calendar, like a year. He's like, this is my year. And he's like, and this is going to be a kick-ass year. All I need to do is I just need to do it now. I just need to live a year out. And, that is ultimately what athletes do because, you have a, your macro cycles, your mini cycles, a mini cycle is 4-week cycle, macro cycle is a 4-week cycle, sorry, 4-month cycle. And then you have 3 of those macro cycles, obviously, that make up a whole full year. And so this is something that you do learn as professional sport or in swimming specifically, because that's how we work. And that's, again, the kind of the way that I work in finance. I'm a portfolio manager. My year runs from January till December. On December the 31st, I've made X amount of money, you will get paid X. That is how it works. These are my guidelines, very similar, sounds like swimming. This is where you're going to race. This is your lane. No one can interfere. You're measured on your time. If you're the fastest guy, you win. So I really love that style and that, shall we say, framework to work in. I know, maybe sales might be a little bit different, et cetera, something like that. But I'm sure there's obviously ways that you can incorporate that. But again, translating that into everything and not into this.
Your point is sales is so perfect.
These holidays, mid year, that's going to be great, etc.
Yeah, but it's so aligned because where salespeople struggle is they get to December 31, and how much have you made, which is how much you're going to get paid. And just like you, as of January 1, you've made no money. Like you have to start at zero. Yeah. You win an Olympic gold medal. And you're a world record holder, the next race, you're zero. Like it counts for nothing. It's your ability to swim that race, right? And if you can get to that microcosm of just what's in front of you. You know, Steve Waugh, the cricketer, my old business partner, interviewed him and said, how do you concentrate in 35 degree heat for 2 days? And he says, you don't. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. I concentrate for 5 to 10 seconds. And then I break. He goes, I think about dinner. I think about a joke someone told me. And then I come back and I have total concentration for that 5 to 10 seconds. And it's just, we sometimes, again, we overanalyze this thing that we need to do 3 years and 5 years. And then what can I do today?
Yeah.
And how does that add up to my cycle of the week, which is how does that add up to my ideal month, which is how do I nail this quarter? You know, like you can't achieve a year today. We can just achieve today.
Exactly.
Right, just nail what's in front of us. Be present with what's in front of us. Hey, I know we're running out of time. I personally could probably do this forever, I think, speak to you and pick your brain. And I'd love to meet you in person if we're ever, you know, we're crossing paths in that way. I think it'd be amazing. I think I'm lucky in my job, and I said this to a client today, or prospect today that we met. Most people in their careers work with 2, 3, maybe 10 companies. I get to work with more than that in a week. So I'm just learning all the time. And to sit down with you, it's inspiring. It really is. Like, about how I can attack my day, my week, my month, my life, I suppose, more than anything else. And it makes me more appreciative of my life.
100%. You know, the simple truth for me is the world needs more people like, I mean, the way he explains how to approach problem solving and create fantastic things in your life. I love it, bud. So appreciate you taking the time, my mate.
Yeah, really. Absolutely amazing. Thanks so much. And if we can sort of finish with this, read the book.
Read the book.
Right.
I love it.
I think that's the bit I'm gonna keep telling myself.
Do the work. Read the book.
And enjoy the process.
Yeah, just love it. And it comes across. Yeah, it really does. It comes across. Well, thank you for making my day. Pretty inspired going into my next meeting now. Look out, my next meeting.
We're going to plan the whole year at lunch.
Yeah, that's right.
And then just live the calendar.
Yeah, that's right. no, but that's really exciting.
Thank you, guys.
No, I really
that was lovely. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Cam.
Take care.